Welcome to Felony Friday, a presentation of the Lions of Liberty podcast. Here is your host, John Odermatt.
Felons, friends, and freedom lovers, welcome back to the Felony Friday podcast. This is the show where we focus on injustices in the broken criminal justice system. We publish a new episode every single Friday. We have another great show today. The format for today's show is a little bit different than the last couple we've had. It's going to be a little more conversational, a little more freewheeling rather than the interview format. But before we get started on the show and we dive in and I introduce my co-host, I wanted to remind our listeners where they can find the show notes for today's show. You can find them at lionsofliberty.com/FF6. Everything we talk about and will be linked to there. We're going to talk about a bunch of different articles with felonies, and you can find them all at lionsofliberty.com/FF6. Today I'm joined in the Felony Friday studio, I guess the Lions of Liberty podcast studio, by a very familiar voice that you pretty much hear during almost every other episode of the Lions of Liberty podcast. He's the host of pretty much every other show other than Felony Friday on the Lions of Liberty podcast. It is Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, welcome to the Felony Friday podcast.
Well, Odie, I'm absolutely honored to be here. And I'm also honored for a couple things you mentioned there. I'm honored to be called a Mr., because to me, Mr. Clare was always my dad, but maybe that's a sign that I'm growing up. And also that you introduced me as a co-host instead of just a guest. That's just, it's such a different feeling. You know, if you're a guest in someone's home, it's kind of different. You're kind of just like an outsider. But if you're actually, you know, if you're the co-host of the party, it's a different feeling. So thank you for that.
Well, yeah, you're not a guest. You've been on the show before, for one. And, you know, you used to co-host we used to have the Felony Report back in the day before we started this Felony Friday podcast. So, yeah,
those were the days back 2 months ago.
2 months ago, ages ago. I can't even remember.
Way back in 2015. Those were good times.
Yeah, a lot's happened since then. But like I was saying before, the format's going to be a bit different. This isn't going to be an interview. I'm not going to be drilling Mark with questions.
Well, thank God. Phew. Because I am not prepared for a heavy line of questioning today.
Well, there might be some heavy questioning. I don't know. So you might want to prepare a little bit. But we're pretty much going to be talking about some felonies. And I want to get started off with one from – it was a pretty big story in January, I think, where there was a big story earlier – even before this story broke, where some people went into a Planned Parenthood and recorded what was going on and caught a couple of Planned Parenthood employees talking about possible criminal things, selling organs and whatnot. And what I want to talk about here, actually a sort of surprising development in that case, a Houston grand jury, they actually took the case to look at and forming some indictments against Planned Parenthood. But after reviewing the case, the Houston grand jury actually brought felony indictments against the two people who went into the Planned Parenthood and were recording these employees there. They were both charged with tampering with government records. So it's a little bit strange scenario, sort of a big backfire. This group, the group that went in is called Center for Medical Progress, CMP. And the goal of the videos was to show that Planned Parenthood to show they were selling fetal tissues, but it kind of backfired on them. So, Mark, are you familiar with this story?
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember the videos coming out, I guess, earlier last year in 2015. And obviously, this was tied to a lot of political stuff. I mean, Center for Medical Progress is an organization that was, from as far as I can tell, specifically created to release these videos. They're not some organization that's been around for years fighting for anything. They're just specifically the group of people, you know, a front group, I guess, these guys made to put out this video. So it's a tough issue. And it's interesting that we're talking about abortion again, because I literally went like 2 whole years producing and hosting the Lions of Liberty podcast. I don't think the word abortion was mentioned once. And in the last 2 months, it's come up with Professor Lauren Hall, who I spoke with, And of course, you'll link to all this great stuff in the show notes. I'm doing a little, giving a little more work for you on this one.
Indeed, I will.
Recently, it came up with Andrew Sirios on a recent show in the midst of conversation, just not even as part of my plan. And then again, we were discussing it with Brian McWilliams on the last edition of Rand Pluses and Minuses that we did based on Rand's conception of life, Bill. So it's really a subject that, as much as I've tried to avoid it, it seems to keep cropping up. And here it is, rearing its head again on Felony Friday. But yeah, I am familiar with the case to some extent. I knew about the videos and I knew about the charges. I guess that they're alleging that they're basically just harvesting fetuses for organs. And I mean, I guess that is, there is some truth to that, is there not, in the sense that there, some aborted fetuses are used for testing and medical research and that sort of thing. But I guess the claim was that Planned Parenthood had been doing things against the law, where, as far as I can tell, and correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like, whatever our moral reservations one way or the other might be, it doesn't seem like they were actually breaking the law here. And I guess this grand jury agreed.
Yeah, the claim was that Planned Parenthood, by the law, they're allowed to not sell fetal tissues, but they're allowed to be compensated for giving fetal tissues for testing and whatnot.
Shipping and handling, basically, right? They're not supposed to...
Shipping and handling, right? Which, I mean, I think this is, you know, no matter how you feel about abortion, this is kind of a strange way to go about activism, to try to pin them in a corner on little minor details like this, rather than talking about, if you really do have issues with abortion, you know, talk about what you think that the problems are, the moral problems, when you think life begins, things like that. And as you were talking about before, Mark, abortion coming up, you know, more and more the past couple episodes of the Lions of Liberty podcast, I think that it's no coincidence that we're in the midst of a presidential election here. And that's probably why it's coming up more often.
Is that what it is? Here, I thought I was just trying to push the envelope a little more.
Maybe a little bit of both, possibly. I don't know. But it's a very important topic and it does need to be talked about. But I think, unfortunately, we get into these extremist cases one way or the other, where you have people on the left, I shouldn't say left, you know, left and right is so generic, but people that are very pro-life will say, you know, all the way up until the baby's born, it's the mother's right to abort. And people on the other side will say, obviously, right at conception, it's a life, there should be no abortion. So I think there needs to be, as a human race, we should come together and really have a discussion about this. And when, just looking at the facts, when is it reasonable that life begins? When there's a heartbeat, does life begin then? I would probably argue yes. When there's a heartbeat, you probably shouldn't do an abortion after that. But what are your thoughts on that, Mark? Not to, you know, go way off course here on abortion, but just to close this up and get
your
opinion.
Well, let's dive in there. I mean, now that the abortion Pandora's box has been opened on the show, we may as well just keep digging at it, right? But yeah, I mean, it's always been a difficult issue for me. And I'll get a little personal here for a second because I'm adopted. So I've always thought of it. And this is not really related to the libertarian principle because I don't think we should base our moral beliefs on anecdotes from our personal lives. But it has shaped my view, I guess, prior to thinking about it much deeper. But you know, I was adopted and I've always thought of it as, well, you know, why abort somebody when you can adopt them? Like, I don't know what the exact decision that my birth parents went through in that process, but at some point they decided that they weren't going to raise me. Now, maybe this was well beyond the point where abortion would have been an option, so maybe that was never even discussed. But, you know, as far as I know, it's possible that these people were faced with a decision to either abort or to take it to term and give it up for adoption. Obviously, I'm pretty thrilled that they did the adoption thing because here I am, and I know there are a lot of parents out there that, again, we're going a little off course here, but a lot of parents out there that are trying to adopt children that can't have children for themselves. So to me, you know, I like to think we should encourage people to carry most babies to term for that reason. At the same time, what I like and what I think someone should do does not necessarily dictate, you know, what they should do morally or legally, or I guess what they should be forced to do. So, and I think both statements you kind of made about the pro-life and pro-choice sides, I kind of agree with both statements, and that's why abortion's so difficult, because I do think that once the conception has occurred, it's a life of some kind. I mean, once that has occurred, it is a group of cells that is forming into a human being actively every single second. So I would go as far as to say even life even does begin at conception. Begin, you know, it's certainly beginning there, but that doesn't necessarily translate to the idea that the woman should be barred from having an abortion, because there is her body and she does have a certain level of rights over that body. I would say she almost has absolute rights over that body until you are really harming another individual. And this is, again, where we get into almost a circular argument, because when does that individual, when does that fetus have rights that suddenly supersede the mother? And I don't think there's any day we can point at. I mean, I guess they have the 7-month thing where they say partial birth abortion is not allowed. And to me, I think that seems pretty obvious that that's wrong at that point. When you're pulling out a child that's not, that can, is actually trying to breathe outside of the womb, and you have to take some action to end that fetus's life, as opposed to just when you, you know, maybe 2 weeks into a pregnancy, you're just, nothing's crying when you're pulling it out. Nothing's trying to breathe. To me, those are very different things. But unfortunately, in this pro-choice, pro-life debate, any sort of nuance like that kind of just gets tossed out the window and breaks down into a, you know, generic political banter. I don't know if I even answered the question there, but my point is, it's not an easy answer. I mean, it's just not. And anyone who tries to make it one is just not giving the issue enough thought.
Yeah, it's definitely not an easy answer. It's not a black and white answer. There's a lot of gray areas. And I think you kind of got it at the root of the point there. It's, when do rights begin? Because when the baby becomes a, you know, a life, they should have rights. The mother has rights as well. But that, just because the mother has rights doesn't mean that when this person living inside them, when do they get rights to life? It's tough. It's very difficult. And it's become something that, you know, I've started to really analyze my own views on it a lot more, you know, recently in the past 5 months when my daughter was born. And before that, you know, seeing the sonogram and everything, and at 20 weeks, seeing her put her little hand up, it's really made me question some of my beliefs. But I don't want to spend the whole show talking about abortion. We have a couple other felonies to talk about. The title of this article, Man Murders Wife While Out on Bond for Unrelated Felony Rape Charges. It's sort of a confusing story here. I'll try to start at the beginning. And obviously, if you don't follow along what I'm saying here, I'll post this up in the show notes for the show. So we'll start out. The man's name, Larice Wally Woods. He was jailed originally on sexual battery charges. His alleged victim said that he broke into her home and raped her. And he was indicted for this charge by a grand jury, and he was charged with a felony. However, at the time that this felony charge happened, the chief criminal prosecutor reviewed Woods' prior convictions, and there was nothing that really showed up. So she just recommended that he be set free on $5,000 bond. That's 10%. It was $5,000 bond, 10% of that. So he got out for only $500. Somebody who broke into someone's house and raped someone is out on the street for just $500.
That right there already seems a little low. I mean, I think the whole issue of bond is difficult because you're holding someone against their will who has not been convicted of anything. But if there's enough evidence that they are violent, you know, there's got to be some way in there to, I don't know, perhaps restrain them from causing further violence, which is obviously where this goes. So continue.
The prosecution didn't know something very important at the time. There was an emergency order of protection that was filed by Woods' estranged wife, Emily Young. The order was filed in November, and the hearing for the rape charge wasn't held until December. Ironically, Woods' day in court for the protective order was the same day as his bond hearing for the sexual assault charge. This is the sexual assault charge, is the one where he broke into someone's house and was charged with felony rape. So what happened here is the order, the protective order, fell through the cracks. The prosecution didn't know about it.
At least he only had to go to court the one time.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. Good for him, bad for society, yeah. And bad for his poor wife, because what happened is he's let out. This is in December, and then January 7th, he tracks down his wife, his estranged wife, I should say, and shoots her multiple times while she's sitting in the driver's seat. Another woman sitting in the passenger seat, and their two children, a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, in the back seat of the car. Just a very tragic story. And really something like this, the reason why I wanted to talk about this, because this just shows, this case is a great example of the problems with our criminal justice system. There's so much focus put on enforcing drug laws, you know, getting people that are selling, you know, cocaine or heroin or marijuana, zeroing in on that. And you're going to allow someone that is committing violent crimes, break into someone's house to rape somebody, and not even put in the time and effort to do your research to see that the same person also has a protective order against them to protect him against this violent individual.
And you would think there would be a very basic, you know, just scan the current records of what's going on and that should just pop up. I mean, obviously, I don't know how their court system and their records are organized, but clearly not very well.
No, not very well at all. And I mean, it could be a case of, this is what happens when you have a society with just so many freaking laws. I mean, it gets hard to keep track of all the criminals, I would think. And we need to have more focus, I think. And that's one of the reasons that I always advocate for, getting rid of drug laws. I think it just confuses things. And it takes resources that really should be allocated to protecting people from violent crimes like this, people killing people, just, you know, outright lunatics that really have no moral compass or anything whatsoever. And the resources are distracted from, you know, really zeroing in on those people. Instead, they're looking at nonviolent drug offenders.
I'll tell you what, if this guy was caught and arrested for, say, selling a pound of cocaine, he would not be on bond for $500. And that is just sad because, you know, whatever your feelings about how the bond system works or whatever, I mean, you're comparing someone who's not harming anybody, who is just selling a substance voluntarily to a customer, compared to someone who we have pretty strong evidence of is violent and is attempting to harm people and has attempted to harm people or harm people in the case of this guy in the rape, or barely paying any attention to it. And I mean, I do think the amount of truly violent people in the society is so small that it shouldn't actually be that hard to focus very strongly on those people. But it becomes hard when, like you said, you have so many freaking laws about anything and everything, particularly about the war on drugs, which just clogs up the court system so that people like this can easily fall through the cracks. I mean, I'm joking about their record keeping, but you know what? I can actually see how someone like that could fall through the cracks in a system that is just so overwhelmed. I mean, especially now, too, you see a lot of states that are having economic troubles. Their state budgets are kind of getting more difficult to manage. They're making cuts in the courts. So the courts are getting cuts all around. And at the same time, you're just pumping in all these, you know, victimless crime victims, victims of the laws anyway, into the system while guys like this get out, are caught, and yet they're released. It's just because, you know, well, we didn't really do enough of a background check on you. So, I mean, to me, this just, it's too easy sometimes to tie everything into the war on drugs. But guess what? You pretty much can. We couldn't do it with abortion. I'm sure there's a way if we tried, but you pretty much can tie everything into the war on drugs because one way or another, everything is either related to it or there's more serious crimes out there that are getting distracted by it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it needs to change. I mean, a lot of people, you hear people will blame the state for these drug laws, but it's people in society. Most, I would say the majority of society favors these drug laws. And maybe when they see a case like this, it can wake them up that, you know, something like this could have been prevented if we had our, you know, the authorities, if we had the police, if we had the judicial system focused on solving the correct problems, on stopping violent crime, on locking violent criminals away. Let's move on. And we're going to play a little game next.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah, we played it last time you were on the show, Mark. It is called Is This a Crime and Should Anyone Do Time? Maybe we'll find some music for that eventually. I think it could be a fun game show, some game show music we'll plug in there at some point.
Hey, maybe we should give a shout out to our fans. If anyone wants to submit some potential music for that little segment, well, do it.
You can email the show at felonyfriday@lionsofliberty.com.
There you go.
And yeah, just email your little MP3 there and listen to it.
If you're good with jingles or you want to whip something together, we will plug the hell out of you on the show. So, you know, that offer is out there, my friends.
Indeed, we will. That offer is always standing. So let's get into the little game here. So this first one here, I think it's something that you can sympathize with, Mark, being a dog owner. So this story here, it's a pet owner who was arrested for trying to rescue his dogs during a fire. There's a little more to the story than that, sort of a misleading headline maybe, but that's the title of the article. So this is in Brevard County. Sheriff's deputies arrested Wendell Joyner for going inside his burning home to save his three dogs. So this fire erupts around 5 a.m. The local fire crews arrive at the scene of the crime. Someone calls 911, obviously. Investigators show up. This guy's outside his house, and he starts to panic. He realizes his dogs are inside the house, so he goes back inside to look for them. The house is on fire. He's having trouble getting back inside the house, so what he does is he grabs a firefighter's axe, and he throws it through the front window to have access and trying to get in through the window. That's when the deputies tackle him, you know, picks up an axe, throws it at his own house, which, you know, it's his own property. Of course, he threw someone else's property at the house, but we can get into that discussion there. They tackle him and arrest him, you know, say that he smelled of booze and they're worried he was going to hurt someone. So it's not really as easy as he was arrested for trying to save his dogs. He was arrested for picking up an axe and throwing it through a window. So the question here, I think, is pretty straightforward. So you could kind of put yourself in his shoes. If your house catches on fire, you're outside, your dogs are inside, you see an axe laying there, you throw it through your window, try to get in to let your dogs out. Should that be a crime? And should this person do time?
All right. I'm going to try not to be wishy-washy like I think I was on the first episode. So I'm just going to boldly state that no, this is not a crime, and no, he should do no time. Now, I will briefly address the one thing you did mention there, which is if anything can be construed as a crime in this situation, you could argue that he grabbed the property of another person, of the, well, not another person, but just the firefighters or the whatever, the firefighting organization, and grabbed their axe. And, you know, perhaps that was, you know, a violation of their property rights over the axe. But he's a taxpayer. Pays taxes to the fire company. Fire company shows up. I don't know. I feel like the axe is as much his as it is theirs, isn't it? But look, if he was coming at them with an axe or anything like that, I could see their story making a little bit of sense that they were worried. But in the story, it says he actually threw the axe through. And I think it was clear he was trying to get back in the house. Now, maybe they were tackling him for his own safety, although that's not what they said. Maybe that was the idea of some of them. You know, we don't want this guy continuing running into his house here while it's on fire. But I can definitely say, I mean, like, I don't want to sound like a tough guy, but and I don't know what I would actually do in real life. But if I knew my dogs were inside, I would do everything I could to get them out because they're like the world to me. I mean, I'm not going to compare them to a child because I don't have a child like you do, but they're the closest thing that I can get to one right now, or that I have to one right now. So, I mean, I can truly say, I'm not saying I would, if I knew the building was truly on fire, I would just, you know, jump through flames literally to save my dogs, but I would do everything within remote reason, up to and possibly including grabbing the fire department's axe and throwing it through the window if that's how I had to get back in. So while you can make an argument that he didn't really do things the right way, in a moment like that, you're just trying to, whether it's humans inside or dogs inside, you're trying to save your loved ones. And I don't think he did. Doesn't sound like he did anything to deserve being arrested, and certainly not to deserve the beating it seems that he got. I mean, I see the mugshot here on the picture of him, and he looks like he got pretty banged up from these guys. These tough guy firefighters.
They beat him up pretty good. And I'm in agreement with you. You know, if they're tackling him for his own safety, if they think he's going to hurt himself going in, sure, that's one thing. But charging him with a crime and, yeah, beating him up, really physically abusing him, really, I think the crime here maybe should be the firefighters for assaulting him to that degree. I mean, you think they'll be able to just hold him down. It's sort of ridiculous. You know, you can make him pay for a new axe maybe at the most if the axe is damaged, probably not. You know, it's a firefighter's axe. It probably is, you know, made of fire retardant material. It's probably fine. So let's turn the page to the next one here. This one is in Frisco. A mom is ticketed for wearing a seatbelt incorrectly. And this one's maybe a little bit closer, near and dear to my heart. You know, having a small child, I can identify this a little bit. What happened here is this woman, Whitney Dunbar, is driving along to the mall with her three kids. And she had to make an unplanned stop. So she says she has a sick baby in the car, and she's, you know, stopped, her car stopped, and she's, you know, has her seatbelt, like, it's not coming over her shoulder. She has her arm up over it, so it's coming underneath her, like where her armpit is. And she's trying to hand her baby a piece of fruit. So a cop, I guess, is just staring into the car and sees this and approaches the vehicle, issues a ticket. And she received a $175 ticket for wearing a seatbelt incorrectly. So the question here, is this a crime? And should she pay a fine, really? That's the question here.
As long as we can still mostly be rhyming, I'm cool with it. Yeah, this is another one where I think I can boldly state that this is not a crime and she should not pay a fine. And we can go into, you know, the justness of seatbelt laws, if seatbelt laws should exist. She's not even being charged with not wearing her seatbelt. I mean, she's just being charged with not wearing it incorrectly at one moment when she stopped. I think this is just another example. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I talked about with Lenore Scanese a few months ago. And it's a state trying to become the parent of the parents. And I mean, I guess it's technically a seatbelt law she's fined for. But to me, there is an officer saying, oh, look at this mother handing this kid fruit, and she can't just be allowed to do that. And that's dangerous. And she needs a ticket. And this kind of stuff is just should not be the realm of law enforcement. Now, if you're truly putting a child in danger in a way that we can really see, that's one thing, but that's not the case here, clearly. And at some point, common sense needs to come into play. And I hope this woman fights her ticket, and I hope there's a common sense judge there in Frisco. Where is Frisco? Texas?
Sounds like it'd be in Texas.
But judge there in Frisco to rule that this is just silly. It is in Texas, by the way.
Frisco, Texas. Of course it's in Texas.
Of course it is.
Learn your geography.
No offense to Texans, but of course this happened in Texas.
Yeah, but I was thinking about this one a little bit today, and seatbelts could really be handled by insurance companies.
There you go.
Maybe privacy people might have a bit of problem with
getting
this.
Getting a little Bob Murphy and Cappy on us here, huh?
Maybe a little bit, maybe a little bit, maybe not. Just hear me out. So imagine if you had insurance companies that could maybe make a deal with car manufacturers to put some sort of device in your car to show that your seatbelt's on. And if it registers, and you would obviously have to consent with the insurance company to get a lower premium, saying I wear my seatbelt all the time, and this little sensor could check, say, yeah, you're wearing a seatbelt all the time, you get a lower premium. Of course, somebody could say, screw you, don't put that in my car, I don't want you monitoring for my seatbelt, and you pay a higher premium. I think the problem's solved there, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's one great idea. The other way we can look at it is through the roads. I mean, we're always talking about who will build the roads. And look, when we see roads the way we do now as this public utility that everyone will have access to at all times, then I guess it sort of makes sense to have local governments that manage those roads also making rules like this. But in a society where roads are funded differently and where they're more seen as private organizations, as things people maybe subscribe to access to certain roads. I mean, I think the owners of roads would set certain rules, and some of those rules might be, you have to wear your seatbelt to be on this road, and that's fine. The problem comes where states or local municipalities just make sweeping regulations such as these seatbelt laws and just apply them universally to everybody and then try to basically make things like that a crime. I mean, no one's rights are being violated when I choose not to wear a seatbelt. Not me. I do actually choose to wear my seatbelt. A, because I don't want to get pulled over. B, because I do actually feel that I'm safer if I wear a seatbelt. However, I'm not creating anything that should be called a criminal act. And to me, that should not be something that's in the realm of rights and crimes, which is, what we're discussing here on Felony Friday. So still, no crime, no fine to me. Although that's not the reality, sadly, for this young woman.
Well, I am in 100% agreement with you on that one. So I guess we agreed on both.
All right.
I guess
no controversy here in the podcast, despite about the fact that we talked about abortion for 10 minutes.
That's why I keep having you back on the show. You always agree with me.
Right. Well, I'm the host of most of these shows, so I got to come across as somewhat agreeable, right?
That is true.
I'll save my challenges for all the other guys.
You're a pretty agreeable chap there, I guess. I guess we're going to have to wrap up the show here. We're running out of time. We keep these shows tight to a half hour. When I say tight to half hour, I mean somewhere close to a half hour. So I want to thank you, Mark, for coming on and talking about some felonies today. We'll probably have you back in a couple weeks or so. We'll sprinkle in some interviews and maybe have another co-host on. I don't know. We'll see. But will you come back on the show if I invite you?
I will have to give it some thought, but I'm leaning towards yes. Today seemed to go pretty smoothly. And don't forget, this coming Monday, we're going to have some more debate talk for everybody. We're going to be talking about the Democratic debate, and you're going to lead a little crew to talk about the Republican debate. And we're going to do all that over the next few days. That'll be available for you this coming Monday on Lions of Liberty, our always beloved debate roundtables. But that's all I got on the table, man.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have dueling debate crews, a different crew for the Democrats, different one for the Republicans. So tune in for that for sure.
And then we're going to have a dance-off to see which crew is better, but no one's going to be able to see that because it's a podcast. So sorry, guys.
Exactly. But you can imagine. You can imagine what it's like. So I wanted to point out to everyone, we talked about a lot of stuff. Mark talked about a lot of previous podcast guests that I want to be able to point you to those podcasts to listen to them. I want to be able to point you to the articles we talked about. You can go to lionsofliberty.com/FF6 for the show notes. Keeping it simple, just lionsofliberty.com/FF6. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We tweet these articles out. We share them on Facebook. Make sure you're getting easy access to them. You can join our private Facebook group too, the Lions of Liberty Forum. You can do this simply by searching Lions of Liberty on Facebook. Our group will pop right up and we'll let you in as quick as we possibly can. Subscribe and rate the show on iTunes and Stitcher. And when I say the show, I'm talking about the Lions of Liberty podcast. The Felony Friday podcast is underneath the Lions of Liberty umbrella, where we have, as we talked about, we have Mark's interview shows. We have our debate roundtables. We used to have Rand pluses and minuses. I think we'll have one more of those coming up soon. So we have a bunch of different shows, and we'll probably have some different formats being in the future, maybe being unveiled. I don't know. We'll see. We were always getting creative, always getting creative. If you have any ideas for the show, if you want to come on the Felony Friday podcast, or if you just want to shoot me an email and say hello, you can reach out. The address is felonyfriday@lionsofliberty.com. You can check out the archive, the Felony Friday archive. Everything I ever wrote, remember, before the podcast, Felony Friday was a column. So you can check all that out at lionsofliberty.com/felonyfriday. This is John Odermatt signing off. Always remember to keep your head up and the fires of liberty burning.